Blog Talk Radio.
Coming live, a show-stopping, red carpet walking, elegant award show, September 29th to a Metro Detroit theater, is the hottest award show of the year. It's the first annual Spoken Word Billboard Awards, celebrating the Hot 100 ranking artists from across the globe in the elegant facility of the Village Theater in Canton, Michigan, featuring performances by R&B sensation Laurie Edwards, hip-hop phenomenon Zach One, soul singer Stephen Guy White, spoken word artist Romeo Donati, romantic blues musician Elvin Lloyd Horn, poet Jamie McConnell, vocalist Elfrida Castillo, poet Dom Touch Artist Register, spoken word artist Jazzy Sadilk, and so many more. Be prepared for sheer entertainment that will touch every possible human emotion in your body, making you thirsty and already anticipating the next year's event. Tickets are $25 and are available through the Village Theater box office. Call 734-394-5300 to reserve your ticket today.
Good evening. This is Lori Coburn with Breaking Free with psychotherapist Lori Coburn. And tonight we're going to be talking about the book Gorgeous for God by Lisa Natoli. Lisa's website is gorgeousforgod.com. And Lisa is a Course in Miracles teacher who has dropped fear. She lives her life fearlessly, joyously, and free. And in her wonderful book, she writes about how she made a firm decision to be happy. And so any thought that came up for her that was not happy, that was with the ego's thought system, she dropped. And she consistently made this pledge and acted on it over and over and over, thousands of times, until it became a stabilized, permanent state for her. Tonight I'll be reading from her book, different passages, and you are welcome to call in and ask questions. The call-in number is 917-932-8881. And I'm also a Course in Miracles teacher. My website is lauricoburn.com. That's L-O-R-R-I, two R's, Coburn, C-O-B-U-R-N.com, where you can write in and ask me questions under the Ask Lori tab, and I will turn that over to the Holy Spirit and get back with you. Lisa's book is wonderful. This is made up of all of her blog posts, not all of them, maybe one quarter of her blog posts, because she's been writing fluently for years and years. And she breaks her book down into a number of different stages. She writes under practical application, new beginning, transformation, happiness, healing, forgiveness, sickness, death, undoing of fear, undoing of ego, taking your place as savior of the world. That's what A Course in Miracles calls all of us. We are all the saviors of the world because we have projected this world, and when we awaken to that fact, we then save the world from our false projections. We forgive it, and we look on a world forgiven, and we look on a world with love. That changes everything. Lisa also writes about commitment, God, total dedication equals total power, relationships, miracles, prayer, heaven, time and space, a call to service, peace, perfection, grace and gratitude, and purpose. Purpose. What is our purpose? We only have one purpose here. Our purpose is to wake up, and our purpose is to be the light of the world. We have a caller. Let me go and see what this caller wants. You're on the air.
Oh, hey, Lori. It's Lisa Natoli.
Lisa. That's so funny. Hi. Do you have anything to add to your book?
I thought I would call in and let you know I'm listening. This is fantastic. What a happy surprise. You're talking about my book.
Yes, I was wondering what that phone, that strange phone number was. That must be, is that from an internet or something? It says 111-111-111.
Okay, yes.
Okay, well, if you want, we can, if you want to chat and stay on the line, I don't know if anybody will call in, but if they do, that would be great.
Okay.
And you could stay on the line if you want and answer their questions yourself.
Okay.
Okay, I'll interview you. I'm looking at your book where it says, "Our purpose is the light of the world." What does it mean to be the light of the world in practical terms? What would you say to that?
Well, it means just that. It means, like, I mean, people have read the Bible and Jesus says you are the light of the world, and nobody really knows what that means. And, like, light is really those moments when you're feeling joyful, when you're feeling expansive, when you're really feeling connected to yourself and to people, and you're sharing it, you're giving. And so, you know, I was a spiritual teacher for a long time, but something has shifted. It was really when the decision came, like I heard you earlier saying, I made a decision just to be happy. Like I made a decision that I was going to be happy no matter what. When something was breaking, I could still be happy. You know, and since then, I've had a whole bunch of things happen. You know, people die. A place I was living in got taken away, and I didn't have a place to live for a while. It's not that I didn't have a place to live, but it was like while it was unraveling, I wasn't sure if I would have a place to live. But see, when you live in trust, when you live in God, it's like He always comes in. He's always going to take care of everything, and it's just what I've discovered. And so you start really sharing this with other people. That's what it is to be the light of the world. So it's
okay.
Really not a big deal. Just like wherever you are, whatever you're doing it joyfully, and that's what the light is.
It seems like that's the key that I keep hearing you say over and over again, that you made a firm commitment. And I know that that's what's happened when I've made firm commitments on things. They actually happen and miracles start happening. But as long as we're wavering, it's like what the Bible says, you can't serve two masters. You can't serve God and mammon. And it's the same thing. You can't serve the ego and God. You have to be very, very clear about what you want.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That is true. And that's exactly, it actually didn't start with the decision to be happy. It didn't start with that. It actually started, it was summer 2009. I'd had the course for like 20 years. I'd done the workbook lessons for like 10 times. And I started to realize that any difficulty I was having was me. I just saw it. I saw there's no need for any of this conflict and the doubt and the sadness. And my marriage was unraveling at the time. And things were very uncertain in my life. And I didn't have any money. I mean, it was just this really uncertain time for me. And I saw that I had tried every other way. The only thing I hadn't tried is to be uncompromising, to just follow Jesus. And if He's telling me I have to let go of conflict, which He says, He's very specific. He says, you have to let go of fear. Fear is not going to be taken from you. You have to make a decision that it's not serving you, and you drop it. And the same with doubt and guilt. In the Course in Miracles, it says your only function is to the active denial of guilt in all its forms. So in summer 2009, I just said, I'm done with conflict. And everything, just after I made that decision, everything started going wrong. I mean everything. Everything started breaking in my life. And what I know now, it's just these are just temptations to go back into the conflict again. But see, I'd already made the decision. So from there, it's like, okay, what do you do? What do you do when things are falling apart and you don't want to engage in a defending yourself with someone or getting into these places in your mind where it's like you start to feel bad? And, you know, there's practices like standing still, breathing, trusting. You know, there's simple things you can do to find your center again. You don't have to engage the conflict.
Okay. So when you say that when you became uncompromising, just like the Course in Miracles says, there's no compromise between truth and illusion. It's absolutely unwavering. That's what did it.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm inspired by so many people in time and space who've had these stories of miraculous healings.
Uh-huh.
And they're all exactly the same. They're that somebody has been told they have 2 months to live. And their physical appearance is showing them that they're sick. But in each one of these stories, like Myrtle Fillmore from one of the co-founders of Unity, Louise Hay, you know, Louise Hay, I'm always talking about her. She was in her 50s and practically penniless, had been had 3 horrible marriages, had been sexually abused since she was a baby, and now she's being told she has cancer and she's going to die. But she had heard that she caused it. This is the whole spiritual idea that everyone knows about. You see, everyone knows the language of I'm doing this to myself. If I am experiencing sickness, I caused it with my resentments and my grievances. And she started to affirm the truth. That's what Myrtle Fillmore did. Another guy, Martin Brofman, who was diagnosed with cancer and could die any day. He said, it could be if you sneezed, you could die. And he just made a decision, if that's so, if every day is potentially my last, I'm just going to do what I love and be happy. And each one began simply aligning with the truth of themselves, I'm perfect as God created me. You start connecting with the spirit of yourself, the truth of yourself, and you don't look to the appearances ever again. So Myrtle Fillmore, for 2 years after she made the decision she was not going to be a sick person, she still had the symptoms of tuberculosis and malaria for 2 more years.
Mm-hmm.
But she did not stop. She, every day, she woke up, she said, I'm going to be happy, I'm a child of God, I cannot inherit sickness. And eventually, it just disappeared. All the symptoms disappeared. And she went on to create Unity Church.
Right, right. Those stories are really inspiring. And just even though you in your own life haven't had like a cancer, you've healed your life miraculously in a lot of different areas.
Yep.
Such as drinking and smoking. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was just these things just disappeared. I mean, I had depression. I was alcoholic. I was a smoker. And I lived in constant fear. And I had kind of learned the tricks of being a human being. And so people thought I was successful. You know, I had a good job in New York City. I was working in marketing. I was making a great salary. I had a great apartment. I had friends. You know, I had everything the world tells you one should, like, have to be happy, and I was miserable. And it constantly in fear that I was going to lose my job and how am I going to pay my rent. I was always sick. I was always sick. And I look back at it now, and it's because I had this great health benefits. You know, it's like I was paying big money into my health benefits, and I think, like, unconsciously, I thought I want to get my money's worth. So I was constantly sick. And for me, it was just like, and I know everyone has the memory of something more in them. That's the best part. It has nothing to do with religion. But I know every person I've ever met, like, knows there's more for them. And people think they're going to find it in another job or more money or a relationship. You know, everyone's looking for love. And you try those things and you realize you can't find it. It's like you just—it's just so frustrating. And for me, it just was a moment of total surrender. I didn't know God. I didn't have a religion. I didn't nothing. And I just surrendered. And I kind of just called out to God, and I said, "If you're there, you know, I'd like to know you. You know, I'd like to be happy." And very quickly, my life began to change. and the alcoholism, the desire for alcohol, literally disappeared. And I had been trying to quit for 5 years. I mean, I can't tell you how many bottles of vodka I dumped down the drain, how many packages of cigarettes I would break in half and douse in water, because I knew if I didn't put it under water, I'd go digging in the trash can for half butts. And for 5 years, I just kept making these gigantic declarations, I'm going to have a new life. But see, I couldn't do it without God. But mm-hmm. as soon as I had God in my life, he started doing things for me that I couldn't do for myself. And that's the reason why I'm always grateful to talk about my experience, because I didn't do much. You know, I just said, okay, like, I don't know what it looks like. I have no idea who God is. I don't know anything about it. But if there is a God, you know, here I am. And that's all it was.
And that's a common factor, too, that you hear, where people just finally surrender and say, okay, God, if you are out there, or if there is such a thing as a God out there, help. And they really mean it, because they've gotten to the end of their rope, and then help comes in.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Those are really miracles, and I think those are some of the examples of miracles that A Course in Miracles talks about, that we're entitled to miracles, and we can have them in all areas of our life.
Mm-hmm.
All areas. And that's one of the things I like about your book, is that you cover so many different areas. You cover relationships. You cover health, physical health. You cover eating problems. Let's see. You cover prayer. You cover death. This is good. You have a section in here, How I Learned to Pray in Venezuela. Do you remember that? Can you talk about that?
I can't remember the exact details, actually, at the moment, but what happened was I remember I went down there to teach A Course in Miracles, and there was a big group, very large group. I went to a bunch of different cities, and somebody was in the group who ended up being a thief. He ended up stealing somebody's computer, and he stole all the donations that had been given, and he then took off from his hotel room without paying the bill. And so there was some sort of an emergency call at like 9 o'clock at night to get together to figure out how to kind of get this guy, you know, how to get the computer back. And we were all sitting together, and everyone was very upset. And I just was sitting there, and the woman whose computer was stolen was next to me. She was studying to be a doctor, and all of her things she needed for this very important test that she was supposed to take like that week was on this computer, not retrievable. So she wasn't so much upset about the computer, but the information on it she needed back. So I said, let's just love this guy. Like, anyone who's going to steal is obviously not in need of our condemnation. He's in need of our prayer. So let's all pray. Let's all just really just bless him. And let's just be in that space. You know, it's a whole idea of like Ho'oponopono, where you're just using your mind to connect with the other with love. I didn't know what was going to happen. I'd never done anything like this before. And all of a sudden, someone walks into the room while we're doing this and puts the computer in the girl's lap. And I turn. I said, what is that? She starts crying. She goes, it's my computer. Oh, my God. And what happened was the guy, somebody was in the room listening to this. Me say, let's just love that guy. And he had sold that girl the computer. She didn't know it was stolen. And he had sold it to her for like $1,000 or something. And she gave it back.
Wow.
She just gave it back. And, you know, but that's the thing. Like, you start to really realize that prayer does work. And prayer is not an asking so much for things. It's to have a realization of what is true. So, and that's what I said too. I said, you know what? Let's not ask for the computer to be returned. That's not what we're here for. That's what I said. I said, we're teachers of God. I said, we're teachers of God. We've been brought together tonight at 9 o'clock. We don't know why, but we're here sent into this world by God to be the light. So forget about the computer. Now let's just love that guy. And I have seen, I've had so many things like that happen where you begin to see there really is only one mind. When you start loving your brother who you hate, this is why Jesus says love your enemy. Ho'oponopono. That's what love your enemy is. It's that whole idea of, like, you got to start really generating and, you know, some sort of an attitude of gratitude and appreciation and love, and your brother will miraculously transform before your eyes without you saying one word to him physically.
That's really, really good. And you write in here, are you ready for a miracle? And A Course in Miracles tells us that if we're not receiving miracles, it's because we're not quite ready, that we need purification of our thought system first. And can you say a little bit more about that?
Well, I don't believe in that the purification is first. It's that everyone who's listening, everyone in the whole world is already whole. Everyone's already healed. And so the purification occurs when you start making that shift. It's like shifting a gear in a car where you're moving out of your story, you're moving out of the complaining, and you say, yes, I'm ready. Like, whatever has happened to me, it simply brought me to this place. You know, I had for a while, I don't offer it anymore, but for a couple of years, I had a program that I created. It was a 40-day online program with 40 emails and 40 audios, and I would work with people. And I still have it. I'm really, something really has changed in me. I don't charge for anything anymore. There's a donation button if anybody wants to give it. But if anyone's listening and wants to start receiving this by email, feel free to contact me. My website's gorgeousforgod.com. But what I did with that program was I set it up in a way that it was a 40-day program, and with the goal that within the first 2 weeks, you were going to be finished with conflict, completely and utterly finished. And the way I did it was I asked a series of questions. Are you ready? So before people even came into the program, I sent them a questionnaire, like, are you ready to take 100% responsibility? Are you ready to be happy? Are you ready to let go of your grievances? Are you ready to forgive? And see, by the time someone says yes to those questions, by the time they come on to the first day, I don't have a job to do anymore because they did it. They said yes.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did in the first 2 weeks was I had them, like, just do a lot of their own inner work and just cleaning their own house up. I asked a bunch of questions. What are you angry at? Tell me, name the people. Name names. Don't be spiritual about it. I want all your garbage. I want all your dirty laundry. Just get it out. You've had it buried for all these years, trying to sort it out. Now I want you to just get it out. Just put it on paper. We're not going to fix it. I'm not a therapist. I'm not going to solve your problems because I know you don't have a problem. But you need to get it out. And so I had everyone do all this work. And then what I would do is I would show them that they put it there. Like, I would show them, you did that. You caused that. You wanted it and you caused it, the conflict and the resentments and the sickness. Are you ready to let it go? Like, if you knew that you have two choices, you can either hang on to the story and the complaining and the negativity, and you're going to keep getting what you've always gotten, or you can make a decision that today is the first day of your new life and just let it go. It doesn't matter. Just let it go. And when I did it that way, every person I ever worked with, within way before the 2 weeks, usually like within the first 2 or 3 days, they were ready. And people would write me stories, a bunch of stories of people like addictions being healed, and I had a bunch of letters from people who'd been in therapy for years and years. They couldn't believe it. They said, "Oh my God, in 3 days I'm like, what years of therapy couldn't help me with, it's done." And that's the Course in Miracles. I didn't do that. I didn't do any of that. Every single person who signed up and said, yes, I'm ready. I need help. I don't know how to do it. And then I would just simply kind of get them to the point of saying yes. And once you say yes, it's a done deal. And that's purification.
I want to remind anyone who might be listening that the call-in number is 917-932-8881. And I think something that you're saying about saying yes to the universe, all the love of the universe, saying yes, I'm ready to be transformed, I'm ready to be healed. One of my friends taught me that the hardest thing we'll ever do is to receive God's love, that it's all there waiting for us all the time. It's right there, right next to where we are. But we're the ones who have to say yes.
Yep.
And you talk in your book about recognizing your true identity, and you say that Jesus is a man who came to know his true identity in God. And could you say more about that, how you recognized your true identity?
Well, yeah, it was just recognizing. I mean, you know, you got teachers like Muji who talk a lot about the whole duality teaching of there's a false you and a real you. And, you know, there's many spiritual teachers that talk about this. And there always is going to come a point. I really have found in everyone I've ever talked to is that people start to recognize the imposter. Like, you start to realize, like, you know what, my stories, they're nonsense. Like, this whole, it's like this big, like a charade. Like, even when I was living in New York and working that job, I felt like the whole thing was fake. I felt like I'm not being authentic. I'm afraid to say what's really on my mind because I'm afraid to lose the relationship. I'm afraid to lose my job. So I put a mask on every day. I put stories on every day. I had an identity that I made. I created it. And I everyone knows they're doing that. They know it. You know, you're being a victim and you know it's giving you something. It's getting you attention. It's giving you something. But when you see that that the whole thing is false, you start to then, that's when the search begins. It's like then you want to know who you are. And that, I mean, I bought so many self-help books. Oh, my goodness. I mean, I just went on the search. I mean, I got into groups and teachers and self-help books. And it wasn't until I found The Course in Miracles that I knew I'd found my path. I knew that was my path. It's not necessarily everybody's path, but for me, it spoke to me. And just as I started reading the course, the memory started to return to me. Like each one of us has that memory of being lovable, of being perfect, of being a little child. We all have it because it's in us. And so you start to remember that. That's why everyone's looking for love, because that's love is what you are. So people start searching for it because it's such a deep memory in every single person on the whole planet. But you can't find it.
Pardon?
Nobody can find it. Everyone's searching outside themselves. That's why they can't find it. It's not out there.
Right.
It's in.
I like what you say about everyone knows it. You've said that on a couple different things. You said everyone knows there's more than this world. Everyone has heard you create your own reality, or you're doing this to yourself. Mm-hmm. You say everyone knows when they're wearing masks and they're being phony. And A Course in Miracles says that in lesson 182, where it says, there's not anyone here who doesn't realize that this earth is not their home, where
right.
They don't feel like, you know, there's a home I'm supposed to get to, and this is not it. And when I read that, it really helped me, because working as a psychotherapist like I did, I would occasionally run across people who would be sent to me by family members or by courts who denied that they had any problems or, you know, oh, no, nothing bothers me, I'm fine. And I'm thinking, that can't be. That just can't be. So, because I thought deep down everybody knows it too, even if they're in surface denial. So I think it's really interesting where you say everyone knows it deep down. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when, and if they're ready, then they'll start being honest about it and coming to their true identity. Because that's what I've found. It's the only way you'll be happy here is when you accept your true identity.
Exactly. That's true. Yep.
Yeah. The other thing you said I thought was interesting was how you really knew with your clients or the people who came to you that they did not have a problem, that they didn't need to fix anything. And it's almost like all they needed to do was come back to truth. And I think that is so hard for most of us. We can read it and read it and read it, and yet it's like a lot of people, like you said, you had read The Course in Miracles for 8-10 years, and then one day you just made this decision, and then everything shifted. And that's been my experience, too, with my own studies as well as with my clients, that You do it, and then one day things just change. It's like, whoa, that miracle happens, or that you just wake up. If you're persistent, you do wake up.
Yep, of course. Yeah, because you're already awake. That's the
right
point. Everyone's already awake. One of the biggest traps that the spiritual communities talk about is this idea of enlightenment, that there's a journey to take, that there's a purification to go through, that there's some steps. That's the lie. There's no steps. Everyone is perfect and whole right now. What did you say in the Course? I am spirit. Mm-hmm. I am spirit. That's who I am. This body, this identity, my stories, it's not me. I am spirit. I'm whole and I'm perfect and I'm healed. And what I found is that when you really let yourself stand in that place long enough, the whole appearance of your whole world will shift. I mean, I love talking about energy fields very much. You know, I always love all those movies like The Matrix and all those, just kind of where you can see the energy fields moving between people and the heart chakras connecting with others. And what it feels like to me, I remember reading one time Abraham Hicks. They wrote something like, if you can hold a vibration for as little as 17 seconds, you're already changing the energy field. And then it's something like, and even better if you can hold it for 68 seconds. Now, that doesn't seem like very much time, but when you're in that space of your story, and you're being a victim and you want to, like, be negative, 17 seconds is a lifetime to hold the vibration of I have no problems. Like, every single person, if they could just start saying, I have everything. But what happens is the second somebody's, I don't have, they can't even do it for 17 seconds. Because immediately the mind starts to say, no, you don't. You have this debt and that credit card company's calling you and you know, your relationship's not so, you don't have everything. And the mind immediately pulls you back into the time and space aspect of yourself. But if you can stand for 17 seconds, or the way Jesus describes it in the Course is 5 minutes an hour. Five minutes an hour, if you can just stay in the vibration of the lesson, then that's enough time for the energy to start dissolving all that doubt, the depression. That's the purification. And that's why the Course says, I need do nothing. Because you don't do it. It's the energy. It's the love. It's the power of God that starts literally dissolving sickness. Like, it erases tumors. Like, the light and the love of God is so powerful that if you're able to hold yourself centered in it, just for a couple of minutes, just for a few minutes, you know, couple times a day, you know, start to really get into the practice of it, you'll see. You'll see how fast your life just turns around. It is a miracle.
It is, and I can feel that when you're talking. It's also like when I would hear Abraham Hicks and other healers talking, sometimes it helps to read these things or listen to these things over and over and over again until they sink so deeply in that we incorporate them as part of ourselves. But I can feel it. I can feel that vibration coming from you, that you know this, and that's what A Course in Miracles talks about as the miracle worker who extends the truth to somebody else who temporarily doesn't remember the truth, that you're giving that miracle, you're offering that miracle. And that's what I was so appreciate about your book. It's just, it's full of that vibration of truth and good for anyone who wants to change their life. The subtitle here, The Power to Change the World by Changing Your Mind.
Mm-hmm.
And this one section, you go from chapter 23 in the course, and you talk about rising above the battleground. And that's one of the things I thought about a couple weeks ago when the Colorado shooting in the theater happened, that we have to look at that kind of thing from above the battleground, because when we're down here looking at it, it looks really bad, really horrible. And you mention, let's take a look at this world, that it is an illusion and it's not a pretty picture, but it's also not real. And you're talking here about you can rise above the battleground. From there, you will see all your problems disappear one by one. Well, what would you say to people who say, well, if you do that, you're just in denial?
Well, the Course in Miracles, it's a one-year training program. See, people get stuck in it. They get stuck in the concepts of it, and then they start, like, using the language of the Course as sort of like to be a parrot, like to just say something, there is no world. Well, that's not helpful. Like, this is just a one-year training period. It's kind of like being in kindergarten, you know. It's like you're just given this path that's going to take you 1 year. And what the Course does, it's restoring the memory of who you are back to yourself. So it's only for those who are taking it. It's not to go telling other people about it, because what happens if you do the workbook lessons and you do them to the end? I can't tell you how many people I meet that quit halfway through and they say they did the course. I said, did you do the workbook lessons? Oh, well, I got to lesson 128. Okay, well, then you have to finish them. You have to do all 365 lessons. And what happens once you've gone through the training is during the one-year period, you start to learn you have a guide. You start to learn that God is with you, that you're not alone, and that you start receiving very specific guidance, what doors are open, what doors are closed, where there's going to be trouble, how to avoid it, where to go, what to say. But Jesus tells us in the Course, you have to be co-creator with your guide. You have to make time for him. You have to make time for prayer. You have to listen. You have to ask, what would you have me do today? Where would you have me go? So to me, when there's a tragedy and somebody wants to talk about it, like, what do you think about the Colorado shooting? Well, I don't know. But if I knew somebody and they called me on the phone and said, oh, my God, I did have somebody recently tell me a story. A friend of hers husband accidentally ran over their child.
Oh,
and a very devastating story. And she's had the course for a long time, and she wanted to know what I thought. Like, what do I tell my friend? And my first immediate reaction was to just find that place in me where it's like, what do I say to this person who's asking me the question? And in that situation, all I said to her was, just listen. Listen to how you can be a friend to your friend. How can you be there for her? You don't need to tell her it's not real. You know, you simply know it's not real, but, you know, we're here to be helpful. That's what the Course says. I'm here only to be truly helpful. And I have a friend who used to tell a story. It's kind of like somebody drowning in the middle of the lake. And that's what the whole human condition is. The whole human condition is drowning in a lake, just struggling and chaotic and frantic and fearful. You, as the Savior who knows the truth, don't swim out to them and tell them there is no world. Like a Savior saves. So you really want to be just alert and present in the situation, whatever it is, and you would get the guy out of the water, you know. You'd just be helpful. You'd get him some dry clothes and a cup of tea and just extend love into the situation. So, you know, that's what it is to live above the battleground. It's like you're so present. People think to be above the battleground means to be disconnected. It doesn't. To be above the battleground means that you are so present and you're using Christ's vision, that wherever you go, love is leading you and God is with you and you know who you are. That's what it is to be above the battleground. Mm-hmm. And then you're always saying, now what? You know God's with you. And you know your brother's in pain, and you're there just to really be helpful.
Right, right. So always ask for guidance. Be present to people. Don't just slough it off by saying it's not real. You know in truth it's not real, but that doesn't mean you aren't compassionate and present with your brother.
Well, because your brother is you.
Right.
So you know that. When you know that all of these people suffering is you, you will mm-hmm. start to love them.
Right.
You'll start to care for them. You'll start to just really just be in a whole different space now. You won't be correcting them as if they don't know something that you do. That's why I know everybody knows everything, because I know it. If I know it, everyone knows it.
Oh, that's, wow, I never thought of it that way. We have about 2 minutes left, and I just wanted to mention this one part in your book where you talked about your head was paralyzed for 5 days and you were in extreme pain. Mm-hmm. And you didn't go to the doctor because you were doing pretty much what Louise Hay and Myrtle Fillmore were doing. You were affirming perfection and affirming truth.
Yep.
And you say in here that you saw that it was just energy. And it was energy, and rather than naming it as anything, you just saw it as energy that was blocked and that it could pass through.
Mm-hmm.
And you recommend that with other illnesses, that if you don't label it as bad, you just see it as energy, then it can flow through you and you'll be fine.
Yep. Yeah, because Jesus says that you must make up your mind. He says that. You have to make a decision. You have to choose what the situation is going to be, what the outcome is going to be. Because there's nothing happening outside of you. And so like I just was like, okay, well, this thing is happening. I seems like I'm paralyzed, but I'm being uncompromising now.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started, I kept getting out of bed every day. I was dancing. Somebody told me to dance, to just be happy. And it shifted. It completely just went away. And just suddenly it was like, poof. So I know that's like, it's what it is for everything. It's like but you have to go through these fear points, you see. You have to like really stand in it and say, okay, I'm going through. I'm not going to fix it. I'm not going to fix this problem anymore. And I'm not saying don't go to the doctor. I'm not saying that at all, because it's just like, listen. Listen to what your guidance is telling you in this moment, what to eat, what to do. And you'll be told exactly, just perfectly, what to do.
So, Lisa, we have to wrap up, and it's so obvious that your book was written from a place of experience. You have so much to offer, and I'd like to mention again for people who may be listening to the archives now that this is www.gorgeousforgod.com, Lisa Natoli. Lisa, thank you so much for calling in. That was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, thank you, Corey, but a surprise. Thank you.
Okay. All right, well, I will talk to you later then.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.